The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. From hot dogs to cool kitties, this is Dark Side of the Pooch.
Welcome back to, of course, another fantastic Ross Bridge Animal Hospital Dark Side of the Pooch. He's Dr. Ab Stewart on the left-hand side, of course, on Tony Curry Radio, TKR, not to mention, of course, our wonderful YouTube channel. I'm Tony Curry. We do this show every single week. It's one of our longest-running shows. It's a pet show. It's funny because, you know, sometimes I was speaking down in Shelby County on Friday to some people down there, some court people. I was asked to come down and speak. And it was wonderful. And several people are like, man, I've been a fan of yours for a long time. So don't get angry with me. What the hell are you doing now? And I'm like, no, this is good. I need to meet people because for 40 years, all people had to do is turn the radio on. Now they have to find me. And so I was explaining to them what I was doing. And as I pulled up my app on my phone, your show was running. And they're like, oh, what's that? Is it Pink Floyd? I said, no, it's Dark Side of the Pooch. It's a show about pet care with Dr. Rab Stewart. And they're like, you do pet shows? I'm like, yeah. And so I explained to them that I'm doing all these different things. Next thing you know, So you got a bunch of people listening to your show all at one time. It was great. It was wonderful. How you doing, man? It. Everything good?
Yeah, everything's great.
Good.
Everything's good.
Show's always brought to you by Sasquatch Toys and Comics. Seth Cosby and his bunch doing fantastic work down there. They opened their store a couple of years ago in October. I guess it'll be October. It'll be 2 years already. Oh, that's crazy. They're just having a blast with 60s, 70s, and 80s comics. And, of course, toys still open, unopened in the boxes, Legos, Star Wars, you name it. Any kind of toy you're looking for, they will find it for you. Check out Sasquatch Toys and Comics in Homewood. Tell me what's going on in your world.
We are, you know, it's getting warm and people are getting out and, you know, seeing dogs with, coughing dogs because dogs are getting out together and playing again and seeing dogs getting bit by stuff and
coughing dogs.
What
you said? Did you say coughing dogs?
Yeah.
What do you mean coughing dogs?
Dogs cough, you know,
they're getting it from other dogs.
Yeah. You know, when the weather gets nice and everybody goes to dog parks and those, you know, dogs are getting nose to nose and they share those viruses and bacteria just like we do.
Okay. So this is really interesting because, my dog, which is sitting behind me right now, has been incredibly lethargic, lately. He's good to go. He wants to get out and run. If there's a cat in the middle of the road, he's spot on. But when I've taken him for a walk lately, I get into my second or third mile and he just doesn't want to walk anymore. What's going on? I told you I took him on like a 7 mile, I guess that would be a hike. And I figure, hell, if I can go, I'm 60 years old. If I like, I can walk 5 miles, my dog certainly could because he's in great shape. But recently, whenever I get about 2 to 3 miles in, he just wants to quit. He looks toward shade. He wants to lay down. He doesn't want to get up. And I'm kind of like, are you okay, buddy? Because this is not like, I mean, he's an Australian Shepherd. He likes to go.
That could be a lot of different things.
Okay.
I mean, he could just not want to go. I mean, he could be hot.
Yeah.
He could be sore.
Probably need to bring him in.
Could have cancer.
Yeah, probably need to bring him in. Yeah, I just
could have anything.
Yeah, when he does act like that, I usually give him a day off. But dogs are dumb, so you know he could have just walked 8 miles, and if he hears his chain, he's run to the door. He's ready to go again. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like sometimes we have to treat our dogs like 2-year-olds, so we don't know what's they don't know what's best for them.
Dogs don't exercise like you and I do. We push ourselves. Dogs don't push themselves. When dogs are tired, they're done. You know, they're not doing it for anything other than just the desire to do it. You know, we push through a bunch of stuff. We push through injuries, fatigue, physical fatigue, mental fatigue. Dogs don't do that, man.
I can't over-exercise my dog, can I?
No. No, they're going to stop when they're done. They're not an 80-year-old man that's going to, you know, ride a road bike into a heart attack because he thinks, oh, you know, I'm going to push through this. I'm going to do it. I'm going to get to that 50 mile mark. They don't do that.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's good to know because I've never exercised as much as I have with this dog ever in my life. And I enjoy it. My son enjoys it. And so we get a lot of good exercise. We walk about 20 to 30 miles a week. And so I know he loves to go, as well. So, hey, before we get into some, emails, info@tonycurryradio.net, info@tonycurryradio.net, fish was up for induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame today. This, of course, being Monday the 28th.
They didn't get in. Mariah Carey didn't get in. Billy Idol didn't get in. Black Crowes, Oasis, Chubby Checker, Bad Company, Joe Cocker, Cyndi Lauper, Outkast, Soundgarden, White Stripes did. Does that mean anything? Does that mean anything to you as a fan? Fish is going to get in. I mean, it's just a matter. When was their first album?
Their first album was 1983.
Okay, so this is very interesting now, because the only qualification to get in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, the only qualification is you must have an album at least 25 years or older. So if you're Blake Shelton and you just came out with your first album in 2001, which you did, he is now able to go in the Rock, but it has nothing to do with sales, has nothing to do with chart, nothing. It could be any band, which I like, because it leaves it wide open for everybody then. And so Fish has been around since the early 80s, but this was only the first time they've been inducted. This may be one of those things where, you know, the fans have a vote.
And won the fan vote.
Yeah.
They won the fan vote this year.
Yeah, but they did not get in. Well, what really sucks about this is people thought because they won the fan vote, they were automatically getting in, and all it does is gives them a vote, which really is pretty crappy, because you had 450,000 people that were trying to get them in, and they got like one extra vote, which, yeah, that was kind of a, I'm not too crazy about how that went down, but.
And, you know, Fish is not commercially successful with record sales. They're not. I mean, they're commercially successful with touring, like ticket sales for tours.
Yeah.
But, you know, like the crazy thing is you look at someone like Warren Zevon,
who got in.
I guess, but he got in like as some weird afterthought or something.
He's a musical influencer. Yes.
Yeah. Like, what does that even mean? Like, so you're telling me
he got in with Salt and Pepper.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't really have like Warren Zevon has. I mean, when you hear a Warren Zevon song, you know it's him. Yeah. You know it's him. Like, I mean, he has a very distinct style of writing music. Mm-hmm. And his music is, it's like no one else's music. His voice is like no one else's voice.
Yeah.
And like, he has to get in like under some weird category. Like, Fish is never going to get in.
Yeah, Fish will get in, and I'll tell you why. And I would bet that if you've ever been to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, if you name a band, any band, there's probably something in the hall that has something to do with that band. So for example,
Hot Dog.
We went through a listing of bands: Bryan Adams, Scorpions, America, BTO, Boston, Phil Collins, Crosby, Stills, Nash, Young, John Fogerty, Sammy Hagar, Jethro Tull, Kansas, Meatloaf, Monkees, Motley Crue, Robert Plant. None of them are in. And that's fine, because we want to make sure that we don't run out, right? Because I don't know who the hell in the 2000s is going to get in. I couldn't even tell you, like in 2014, so it'll be 2039. I don't know who's going to be getting the Rock, because I ain't no band in 2014 that I could even tell you could make it in to the Rock and Roll of Fame.
You don't think Limp Bizkit's going to get in soon, Tony?
I think there's probably already a jam band part of the Rock and Roll of Fame that I mean, because it's such an intricate and important part of music, whether it's the Allman Brothers, Grateful Dead, Fish, they probably are part of a jam band section already in the Rock and Roll of Fame. But as far as getting into the ROC, they're in. They'll get him. All right, so enough about Fish, the band. I did want to mention you. You mentioned dogs obviously getting tired and dogs outside a lot. My son has got serious allergies. A lot of that has to do with the fact that he can't keep his face off our dog. He loves to give our dog Zerberts. How much pollen and stuff actually comes inside the home from dog's fur?
A lot. I mean, this time of year, I sneeze a ton, and I'm not allergic to dogs. I'm allergic to all the stuff that comes in on the dogs.
Okay.
You know, they're doormats for pollen. I mean, they go outside, they roll around and just standing there. I mean, think about this. You go outside, and unfortunately it's not as bad as it was, but I mean, you park your car outside for an hour, it's covered in pollen.
Yeah.
Dog stands outside for 30 minutes, it's going to get pollen all over it.
Would it help to shag them down a little bit before you bring them in? Just shake them off, a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Bathe them.
Well, that ain't
rub them down.
Yeah. Rub them down. All right. Cause it seems like, my allergies haven't been that bad this year, and I haven't seen like the piles of yellow stuff on the cars like I normally do, but I can feel it, and it's not good. Also coming up this weekend, the first weekend in May, you know what that is? First weekend in May every year is an animal lover. You should know this.
Is it Doodah Day?
It is not Doodah Day. It's close. It's Kentucky Derby weekend, in Kentucky. Yeah. And I always have several emails, info@tonycurryradio.net, wanting to know if you've ever worked on horses. I think it's because you've mentioned the fact you worked on giraffes when you first got started. And I love that story you've told about giraffes. But any good stories you want to tell me about horses? Any of your thoughts on the Kentucky Derby? Let's get it on. Give me a couple of good horse stories.
So I grew up on a horse farm.
Yeah.
And also, when I was in school, I thought I was just going to do horses for my whole life.
Really?
Yeah. So I did an internship at a practice in Arizona, and they only did horses 24 hours. The best horse story I can give you is the horse story that pushed me out of the horse business.
Okay.
So this place that I worked was a specialty practice, but also a general practice. So they would, they did all kind of crazy surgeries. They had internal medicine specialists. We had an ambulatory service that would like go out and, you know, take care of anything that needed to be taken care of. So, it was round the clock and it was my turn to be on call. It was my night. And so back then this was 2010 and we were still working with a beeper.
Mm-hmm.
So the pager went off, gives you the number to call. I call the number and I love Phoenix. It's probably, it's in my top five favorite cities in America. Love it. Yeah. So awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But Phoenix, like any other, metro area, it has its suburbs that are known for certain things.
Yeah.
And there was this suburb that had greatest name of any suburb that I've ever been to. It's called Apache Junction.
Apache Junction. Okay.
So, Apache Junction is exactly what it sounds like. It is, it's almost like Land's End for Phoenix.
Okay.
You got a lot of like, just kind of, lots of trailers, mm-hmm. lots of backyard horses,
mm-hmm.
Lots of people who may not know how to take care of their horses,
mm-hmm.
lots of broken down lawn equipment in people's yards.
Yeah.
That's Apache Junction.
Yeah.
So I get a call about midnight. Apache Junction. And so I go out there and it's like a boarding facility. It's not a nice one. Some of the boarding facilities in Phoenix are incredible.
A boarding facility for animals?
A boarding facility for horses.
For horses, okay.
So horses have their own boarding facilities.
Yeah.
And like you want to talk about these horses that are in Lexington,
mm-hmm.
for the Derby. Yeah. They live in accommodations that would make,
Oh yeah.
It's people in this country cry.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So anyway, this is not what we're dealing with in Apache Junction. So I get there and, this lady comes out, not sure when the last time she, had a bath or brushed her teeth was, no idea, but she comes to me and she says, "Hey, look, I'm really glad you're here. Our horse, we think, was bitten by a snake." And so I say, "Okay, no problem. Show me the horse." And we go to this round pen. And so a round pen is exactly what you think it is. It's a pen for a horse and it's round.
Uh-huh.
And this particular round pen was made of wood. And, it was basically about to fall down.
Okay.
So horse is in there and it's a Mustang and it is what we would call not broke.
Yeah.
Okay. So, it is a wild Mustang.
Wild horse. Yeah.
Yeah. It's basically it's like dealing with a feral cat, mm-hmm. except it doesn't weigh 8 pounds. It weighs 1,200 pounds,
yeah.
1,500 pounds, whatever it is. And so the thing is just doing laps around the round pen. As fast as you can. The thing's just going crazy. And so there's no way I'm going to be able to look at this horse. So we basically lasso it, slow it down. It's still running. I pull up some sedation. And as it's running by, I pop it really quick with sedation.
Mm-hmm.
It slows down enough for me to look at the leg. And so, we finally get the thing taken care of. At this point, it's probably 3-4 o'clock in the morning and get everything taken care of. The lady writes me a check. I put the check in the truck. I drive back from Apache Junction to Gilbert, Arizona, where our building was and where I live across the street. Get a couple hours of sleep and I get up and go back to work. Go back to work.
Okay.
See a couple of patients. Then I go inside into the office and had a sweet little girl that worked in that office named Bree. And Bree said, "Hey, Dr. Stewart, that call that you went on to Apache Junction last night?" I said, yeah. She said, oh, the check bounced. So I said, okay. All right. Well, you can file this away. This is the day Dr. Stewart decided never to work on horses again.
Yeah. And can you tell me what that amount was?
It was about $600.
Yeah.
And but the thing about it was, I mean, it was a 3-hour call.
Yeah.
From midnight to 3 a.m.
Yeah.
And it's a tough way to live.
Yeah.
To not get paid.
When you got the check, did you think for sure it was good, or were you, I mean,
I was 26 years old, maybe 27. And, man, you know, I didn't live. I mean, I guess you could say I was born on third base. I didn't live in a world of bounce checks.
Yeah.
I didn't know what that was. I didn't know that was even possible to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of listeners out there are like, oh my gosh, this guy's naive as he could be. And I was.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh yes, whatever. People don't write bad checks. It doesn't happen.
Yeah. And get your stuff back. And then hopefully you can cover it by the time they get the check to the, but the funny thing I think is really funny is now you go to a bank with a check on that bank, you deposit it and they won't give you your money right away. They hold on to it till the next day. And I'm like, oh, you know, that the money's in my account. Then why can't you figure out that?
But anyway, so that's a great horse story. I have another great horse story that I have is this is the same year of my internship. And so we went out to a pretty nice facility at this point. And this was an ambulatory call during the day. This was pretty early in my internship. And I was, you know, listen, if I ever get in trouble and I'm in the hospital, I don't want a resident working on me. Okay. Yeah. And here's why. So most of the time when you're working on horses, you have to sedate them.
Yeah.
So we were sedating this horse. I don't even remember what we were doing. And, you know, young Dr. Stewart, has the sedation and horse, like, so you sedate a horse, you put if you're going to put it IV, the sedation IV, you put it in their neck right here. Mm-hmm. You put it in their vein right here. Somehow, some way, I went through the vein into the carotid artery and sedated the horse through the artery. Well, the problem with that is that blood is going to the brain. Okay. And yeah. So when you give this certain sedative tranquilizer in an artery instead of a vein, the horse totally loses its mind and it like has a seizure.
Oh no.
Like rears up on its back legs and falls over backwards. It didn't die.
Jeez.
Unfortunately, you know, it didn't have any serious.
Is that common
injuries.
To do that, to hit a carotid artery instead of a vein?
Dude,
it would seem like it wouldn't be that difficult at all to do.
Oh, it's so difficult.
Oh, is it?
So
okay.
Like I couldn't do it if I tried. And so the Dr. Gail Leith is the, you know, the actual real veterinarian. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have graduated and passed my boards, but you know, she's been doing this for at this point, I don't know, 30 years or whatever. And she looks at me like, you've got to be freaking kidding me. Did you just do that? Like, did you really just do that?
Wow.
So, you know, that's something that I'll never forget, but there were some good moments that year too. Some really great surgeries that, you know, were fun. And it's just, you know, it's a lot of work, man. And it's living in the Wild West.
Is, giving birth. Is that something that is relatively easy, difficult, fun, life changing?
Most horses do it on their own.
Yeah.
But sometimes they need help. And I've been involved with that too, where you have to, and that's an emergency, you know, you have to go out there and, you know, you're putting your hands on the foal as it comes out and repositioning it. And, I mean, it's wild, man.
Can you explain to people, you know, first before, and by the way, Bob Baffert, who's one of the greatest trainers ever, if not the greatest trainer, he had somewhat of a, you call it a show cause or whatever. The last 3 years, he's not been allowed to race anything at Churchill Downs because he cheated. And one of them was they found some type of unspecified medicinal aspect to one of his horses. He said
they were doping.
Well, he said it was something that he was actually taking. I don't know how the horse got it, but whatever. And it wasn't anything, as far as I know, that was going to help the performance of the horse. And that's why it was kind of strange. And then there was something else. Anyway, obviously pretty dramatic and serious if you're getting 3 years. And I don't know how often you keep in touch with horses, but obviously, and it's the dirty little secret of how many horses actually lose their lives every single year at horse tracks. And I want to say Churchill Downs, there were 9 or 10 horses just the week of Kentucky Derby that passed away. I may be totally off on that, but I know I read that somewhere, but it's something that happens, and it's kind of like, yeah, it's unfortunate. It does. Can you explain to people why you must put horses down when they suffer injuries? Why can't we just cast it up? Why can't we put it down so the horse can, you know, actually have it like a broken leg? Why do we have to put horses down like that?
So the best way I can explain it is, so horses, they have four legs. They also just have four fingers. So, they bear all of their weight on four fingers.
Yeah.
And, you know, these horses are, you know, they're 1800 pounds, you know, they're huge. They're massive horses. So when they break a leg, they don't have anything to stand on. So they can't support, horses cannot support their entire weight on three legs.
Okay.
If they try to support their entire weight on three legs, their other legs are going to break down. So they're not going to recover from a fracture. And so you have to euthanize them.
Gotcha. It just seems like, you know, you got this $1 million horse, this beautiful horse, and there'd be some type of way. And obviously horses want to run. They don't want to lay down. You know, it's not like a dog breaking a leg. And it really is amazing because I've been on a Belgian before horse. You ever been in a Belgian? Its head is as big as the room I'm in right now. It's an amazing horse. And I've been on one on the side of a mountain, and I'm just sitting there thinking to myself, how is this thing not falling? How is it keeping its balance on the side of this mountain? I was up in Tennessee, and it scared the hell out of me, because it's like a Clydesdale times two. And, you know, it's sitting there, it's icy and there's waterfalls and stuff. And this horse is walking like it's no big deal. And I just thought it was amazing that a horse can hold that kind of weight on those poor little stilts, because you're right, man, those little legs are like this big.
Yeah. It's crazy. I don't trust horses. Yeah. I don't trust them. I don't trust them to not try to throw me off. I don't trust them to
really
not try to kill themselves. Yeah. I don't like, I worked for a guy, worked for,
Now that surprises me, because you said you wanted to work with horses, right? And a bad check's not enough to get Dr. Rab to give up on a dream.
Well, but the hours were.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't just the bad check. It was the hours.
Yeah.
Because when I was younger, you know, you just you don't realize how much goes into it until you actually do it.
Yeah.
But man, like, horses will try to kill you, like, inadvertently and on purpose. Another story.
What do you mean they'll try to kill you on purpose?
I'm going to tell you. So, first of all, a horse will they will rear back and kick you for no reason at all. None. No reason. Like, there's when you're around horses, they tell you, you ever heard this? Do not walk behind a horse.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It's 100% true. It's 100% true. There was a veterinarian, who was, a reproductive specialist. And so the veterinarian, and he was a friend of this veterinarian was a friend of the reproductive specialist at Auburn.
Yeah.
When I was in school there. And so the specialist was collecting a male horse so that they can breed a female. And so horses that are intact are called studs. You collect the stud. You have a dummy, a mounting dummy. You let them dance around a female that's in heat, and you take them to the mounting dummy. There's a special device. It's basically a fake vagina. Mm-hmm. And the horse, you insert the horse into it, has sex with a fake vagina, you get the semen, and then you breed the female. Well, these stallions are so wild and crazy, and they're flailing everywhere. You have to wear, like, I mean, you're supposed to wear helmets and stuff when you do this.
Yeah.
And so this repro specialist, as he's collecting the stallion kicks him in the head and he dies, literally dies.
Wow.
But so if you walk behind the wrong horse, I mean, the thing's going to fire off at you like a shotgun.
Yeah.
There was one time where, so horses have their GI tract. It basically just floats around in their abdomen. It's connected on one axis, and the other axis it's not. So it can get twisted up. They get a lot of impactions because they're eating stuff off the ground. So you get a lot of sand impactions, especially in Phoenix. They're always eating stuff off the ground. Mm-hmm. So this horse had an impaction. And when it happens, you have to do surgery on it a lot of the time. Like, sometimes they can work it out themselves and they'll pass it. But a lot of times it's surgery. So it's a massive undertaking. So anyway, this horse comes in and it's called colic. When this happens, the horse is called colic. So the horse comes in, it's colicky. I mean, the horse is trying to kill itself. Like literally, it is kicking. It's kicking itself in its belly. Its belly hurts so bad. Wow. So, you know, I'm the intern. I'm out there trying to work the case up. And so I'm taking the horse's temperature rectally, of course. The horse is trying to kick its belly. Okay. But it reaches back too far. And I'm standing exactly where I'm supposed to be standing. It reaches back too far, kicks me directly in the knee.
Oh.
And it's so loud. I can't believe my leg didn't break. It kicked me so loud that the surgeon ran. I'm not kidding. This is a true story. He ran out from the office because he thought that the owner of the horse had brought a shotgun and shot it in the barn.
Wow.
That's how hard the horse kicked me.
And it must have kicked you just right that it didn't break your.
It's incorrect. I mean, it's a miracle. I mean, I couldn't walk the next day. I had to go to the doctor and get x-rays. I couldn't walk. So anyway, the horse had surgery. I couldn't do the surgery because I couldn't stand up. All the other interns had to do it.
So you're kind of painting this story that the horses are mean. I've always, because my son has done special equestrians. My daughter rode a horse. Now both my kids almost fell off. And when they fell off, they were like, they were done. They didn't want to get back on. And I was like, I totally get that. But we've always been told that they're just these peaceful giants and that they're just, I mean, they're super powerful, but they want to be disciplined and they want to listen to you and they want to please you and do it. You're saying that's a bunch of hooey?
So the horses at Special Equestrian, I mean, they're a different kind of horse than what we worked with.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're working with horses that are rodeo horses.
Yeah.
That are, I mean, they are hot-blooded. They are fast. They are muscular. They are athletic.
And for what reason, why people in Phoenix, why would they have a Mustang? Why would they have a wild horse like that? If they can they ride them or what? I mean, what good are they?
This is an oversimplification. Okay. But there are two types of horse owners. There are backyard horse owners and there are professional horse owners.
Yeah.
Okay. So professional horse owners are people that have horses that do a job. Mm-hmm. Okay. They rodeo, they jump, they race. You know, they're people that have high dollar horses. Mm-hmm. And then there's backyard horses. These people go buy a horse for a couple $100 or they get one for free. They don't know how to feed it. They don't know how to take care of it.
Yep.
They don't know what to do when it gets sick. They don't want to do anything when it gets sick. So that's what was at Apache Junction.
I got you. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because we've got a lot of horses here in Shelby County.
Now, okay, so the horses that are out on 119,
yeah, professional.
Those people are doing Western or they're hunter jumpers. You know, they're doing jumping. Those are expensive horses.
I know my friend Mr. Pizitz. Mr. Pizitz used to live right behind me. Had several horses and would put them out. And it was funny because that blue heeler that is now with my ex-wife used to get out of our yard and it would go and run up behind those horses and would bark. And man, I'm like, if that dog takes a hoof to the head, it's done. I mean, it's finished, and those horses would be kicking because he would get behind them because the horses couldn't see him that way. And I was like, it's only a matter of time. Hey, great stuff catching up. Talk about some Kentucky Derby. That was a wonderful show. We're going to leave it there. That will do some emails on our next show, and we got a ton of stuff to get into, including have you ever had what percentage of animal lovers would you say that are customers of yours euthanize their animals and cremate them?
Oh man. Close to, I would probably say 40%.
Okay. But 40%. I got a very interesting story we'll get into next right here on Dark Side of the Pooch, brought to you by Sasquatch Toys and Comics. They do fantastic work down there. Everything from comics to Legos to Star Wars, Battlestar Galactica. They got figurines. They got it all. And a lot of it's still in unopened boxes. Evel Knievel stuff, you name it. If they don't have it, they'll find it for you. Check out Sasquatch Toys and Comics down there in Homewood. Thank you, sir. And we'll catch up next week. 208-0301 Ross. Bridgevet.com. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, bud.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.